Case number 206031, Christopher Mitchell versus USA. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Ms. Rust, you may proceed for the appellant.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Erin Rust. I'm here for the appellant, Mr. Christopher Mitchell, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
I want to start out by just being very clear that Mr. Mitchell has never raised Setzer as a freestanding 2255 claim. We're not arguing that on appeal, and we did not argue that before the district court. The government's focus on the procedural bars to 2255 relief is a distraction from the relevant question that we are pursuing on appeal and that this court directed the parties to address in its order granting a certificate of appealability. And that question is whether the district court's imposition of Mitchell's original sentence violated the Constitution or the laws of the United States because it was consecutive to a state sentence for unrelevant conduct, or because the district court inadequately explained why it ordered the sentence consecutive.
I don't understand you're starting out saying that these other questions are red herrings, because unless I'm missing something, you can't raise this claim because you didn't exhaust it unless what happened here resulted in a new judgment, in which case we start over. And then you're not, then you don't have to worry about second and successive, exhaustion, statute of limitations, everything else. Am I missing something?
Your Honor, we don't need.
You can't raise the question relating to what happened at the original sentencing unless what happened here resulted in a new judgment that gives you an opportunity to raise what you could have and should have raised at the beginning again.
No, Your Honor. When the district court vacates a judgment under 2255 and orders a resentencing, during that resentencing process, the district court resentences an individual de novo. And as part of that de novo resentencing, any changes...
That didn't happen here.
It absolutely happened here, Your Honor. We were in the process of a resentencing. The prior judgment was vacated.
Until the Supreme Court reversed the Sixth Circuit.
The reversal of Stitt was a change in law that the district court was required to apply as part of its resentencing. But the change in law rendered by Stitt 2 did not automatically resurrect the original judgment. That judgment had been vacated. It was not in existence at the time. And as an example, we can see it in this case, because if the district court took no actions at all after Stitt 2, Mr. Mitchell would have no sentence still today. He had no sentence for 3 years between when the district court vacated the original judgment and when it chose to reimpose the original sentence.
Well, your argument is that a reinstatement of a vacated sentence is a new sentence. And if you're right, then we don't have to worry about all the other procedural bars. If you're wrong, you lose.
It is, Your Honor. The district court had to take action. It had to order a new sentence. It chose in this instance that the new sentence should be identical to the original sentence, and it chose to simply reinstate the original judgment instead of issuing a new judgment, but it is still a new sentence that was imposed after a 3-year period where there was no sentence at all. And that resentencing, this court has held, must be reasonable, it must comport with procedural and substantive reasonableness, and the court must apply intervening changes in the law when it is in the resentencing process.
Can I ask you a question? We have a lot of cases where the case was already up in our court when Stitt 2 came down, and we sent all those cases back, and we said that the original sentence should be reimposed, not that there should be a resentencing.
Yes, right. Your Honor. That is the remedy that this court selected in those cases.
You're not saying our remedy is wrong. or maybe you are. But
I'm not saying your remedy was wrong. This court had the authority to order that the original sentence be reimposed, just as the district court had the authority to make that choice. What the government is arguing is that the district court was required to reimpose the original sentence, and that's simply not the case. The judgment had been vacated, validly vacated.
If the case had been up here, a lot of cases where we just said reimpose the sentence. That seems to be the predominant rule, or maybe the exclusive rule.
There are also cases where this court remanded for resentencing. One of those cases is United States versus Stitt, where this court held, United States versus Kitts, where this court held that while Stitt did not offer relief to our client, and that was the reason that he originally was granted 2255 relief, the court held that a different aspect of burglary, in that case it was a pre-1998 burglary, and the court held that on a different element related to, I'm blanking on the specific element at this time, but the court remanded for resentencing and based on a different argument, even though Stitt, the basis for granting the 2255, was no longer valid. The court did the same thing in the case United States versus Dillard, which I believe is cited in our opening brief.
And you're saying you have a separate argument that parallels. You're saying so Stitt doesn't get you anything, but if there's another issue in the case that might get you something, we could order a resentencing to consider that other issue?
Yes, Your Honor. When the judgment is vacated under 2255, the parties proceed to the second step, which is the resentencing. Now, let me be clear, Your Honors. When the district court vacated the 2255, it could have, at that time, simply discharged the defendant entirely. It could have, if the issue had been related to trial, it could have ordered a new trial. It could have, at that time, simply corrected the sentence. That's not what the district court did. The district court ordered a full resentencing.
Well, I don't know. So I was just trying to figure out why the case you cited us, Kitts, was helpful. Because there on the Stitt issue, they just said reimpose the prior sentence, which is what the district court did. And I thought you were saying there was another issue in the appeal.
In Kitts.
There's another issue in the appeal where we said that might be error or something and send it back down for resentencing to take into consideration that issue. But it wasn't a Stitt-driven resentencing.
Your Honor. It was a Stitt-driven resentencing. Mr. Kitts's original sentence was vacated because of Stitt, the same exact way that this one was, where the government and Mr. Kitts' attorneys agreed that Stitt meant he was no longer an armed career criminal. And the government appealed that pending Stitt 2. While it was on appeal in this court, Stitt 2 came down and said, no, actually, aggravated burglary does qualify. But the court remanded for resentencing because another one of his burglary convictions did not appear to qualify as a...
There was a cross appeal? Because you said the government appealed, so I'm now confused. Was there a cross appeal? How did the court get... I guess I just didn't read the case. I apologize.
The government appealed, but we remanded
on a basis helpful to the defendant.
Yes, Your Honor. This court can remand.
I understand. Is that okay? That's. I guess the government has to be careful when it appeals.
So that is precisely the same circumstance, because in that case, the district court vacated the judgment and ordered a full resentencing.
So is the best we can draw from that we could send this to the district court to resentence, but we don't have to.
Yes, Your Honor. And I would also note,
in a lot of cases, we don't.
That's correct. The court exercises its discretion not to. And in those cases, they were not dealing with this type of issue. So if the defendant was no longer an armed all of the arguments that were raised that were not related to Stitt were all had to do with whether or not the defendant was an armed career criminal or not. So if he's not an armed career criminal, then the original sentence, it makes sense. It should be the same sentence. Here, that's not the case. Here, we have a separate issue where the law has changed in Mr. Mitchell's favor. So not only after his judgment was vacated, Stitt, the law changed to his detriment, and the court rightly was required to apply Stitt too. You know, but the law also...
The difference in the case you cited to us was a case where the sentence itself may have been an error, right? Because there was a crime considered, whether it triggered the ACCA enhancement, and we said, well, maybe one of these other crimes doesn't count, so the district court needs to resentence because he may not even get the additional sentence under ACCA, right? Doesn't have qualifying offenses. So that went to the actual sentence itself. And all we're not even talking about the actual sentence. Like, there's no problem with the actual sentence. We're just, I mean, the length. We're just talking about concurrent or consecutive, right?
Your Honor, they're two sides of the same coin.
Well, the other case seems more fundamental to me. In other words, what sentence do you get? What's the length of your sentence to begin with? And that's what the other case is about, right?
Well, Your Honor,
this case is not about the length of the sentence.
This is absolutely about the length of the sentence, Your Honor. The guideline directs a district court when considering a sentence on relevant conduct from a different jurisdiction to not only order it concurrent, but to also reduce the sentence by the prior time that the individual has sat in custody to date on the related conduct. So this absolutely has to do not only with the number of months that he was ordered to serve, but also with whether or not the remainder of his time should be concurrent with the sentence on the related state conduct.
Could I go back to something that you said earlier? You were making the point, which I think was a good point as far as it went, that when the district court first concluded, based on Stitt 1, that there'd been an error here, you were saying he vacated the sentence, right? And then you made the point about there was no sentence then for a while. Your argument is that when there another sentence came into being, that's a new sentence. And that we were trying to figure out, is that a new sentence or is that simply the old sentence? And here's, I know this sounds sort of silly to even be asking these questions, but as I understand it, what happened here is that after Stitt 2 came down, what the district court did was vacated his original decision that vacated the sentence, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So we have a vacation, and then we have a vacation of the vacation. And that's where we get, it seems to me, that's where we get back to he simply reinstated the original sentence. He didn't impose a new sentence. He just undid everything that had happened in between. So what's wrong with that analysis?
Excuse me, Your Honor. Because the court chose to vacate its prior judgment granting the 2255 relief, but that action is still imposing a new sentence. It still must be, that exercise of his discretion still must be a reasonable exercise of discretion, and the court must apply not only the intervening law that is detrimental to Mr. Mitchell, but also the intervening law that is beneficial to Mr. Mitchell.
If it's a new sentence.
Your Honor, we can't go back in time. We can't change the fact that there was no sentence for 3 years. There was a new sentence that was imposed.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Luke McLaurin, and I'm here on behalf of the United States. The denial of Mr. Mitchell's 2255 petition should be affirmed because the district court correctly concluded that his original sentence was lawful, and thus, Mr. Mitchell was not entitled to resentencing or any other form of 2255 relief. Now, to understand the...
Lawful as of the time when it was first imposed.
Correct, Your Honor.
Then there were intervening changes in the sentencing laws that if he had to be resentenced, then it had to have been either done differently or at least an explanation as to why the sentences weren't concurrent. Am I right about that?
I'm not sure I understand your question, Judge McHugh. Could you clarify?
The plaintiff here, the petitioner, wants to get the benefit of the changes in the law or the sentencing guidelines that occurred from the time of the original sentence to either the new sentence or the reimposition of the old sentence, however we're going to describe it.
Yeah, the only way you can get the benefits of a change in law is if you're actually in a resentencing proceeding. And I think the fundamental problem for the petitioner's argument is that there was no resentencing that was actually done here. There was a resentencing that was started, but it was never completed.
Well, that's her whole argument, that there wasn't a sentence and then there was a sentence, so it had to be a resentencing. That's a conclusion that she draws. You draw the exact opposite conclusion from the same facts.
Exactly, Your Honor. And
this was a reinstatement of the original sentence as opposed to a new sentence.
Yes, exactly. And I think
And the sentence, when it was imposed, was done correctly.
Yes, the sentence when it was...
So how do we decide whether you're right or she's right, whether it's a new sentence or a reinstated sentence?
Well, I think it's important to understand, like, how 2255 works. That explains why our position is correct. The way a 2255 petition is supposed to be resolved is in two steps. First, a district court must determine whether a defendant is, in fact, eligible for 2255 relief. That requires essentially asking, was the original sentence unlawful? Second, if and only if the defendant is, in fact, eligible for 2255 relief, then the court can determine the appropriate form of relief, such as correcting the sentence or doing a resentencing. Here what happened is that the district court did that first step of the process, and it initially determined that Mr. Mitchell was eligible for relief under this court's en banc decision in Stitt. It then proceeded to the second step of that process, but before it completed the second step of the process, intervening case law from the Supreme Court, namely Stitt 2, demonstrated that Mr. Mitchell's original sentence was not unlawful and had never been unlawful.
So if we could stop right there for just a second. If it had happened here that the resentencing had occurred after Stitt 1, before Stitt 2, then you'd have to concede there was a new sentence.
Absolutely. Right? If at that point...
So it's just a fortuitous consequence. It's just an unfortunate set of facts for the petitioner here that resentencing didn't get completed and then, in your opinion, never occurred.
I wouldn't say it's an unfortunate set of facts, because if the resentencing had been completed and at that time the court would have been obligated to impose a non-ACCA sentence, the government would have likely appealed that sentence, as it did in many other Stitt cases. And the way the court resolved all of those Stitt cases is that it sent it back, it reversed the order granting 2255 relief, and sent it back with instructions to reimpose the original sentence, to reinstate the original judgment. Now, I'd like to address Radler's question about the Kitts case and why that was different. The reason why Kitts was different than some of those other cases was because, in addition to having a Tennessee aggravated burglary conviction, Mr. Kitts also had a pre-1989 Tennessee second-degree burglary conviction. So he also had an argument that, regardless of Stitt, he still should not have been sentenced as an armed career criminal. So he had a separate basis on which to challenge his sentence. And the court said in that case, hey, you know, there's some legal uncertainty about the status of Tennessee's second-degree burglary, while there's no uncertainty about aggravated burglary.
I think that was the point I was trying to make. You did it better. But your friend on the other side said that there's basically a parallel consideration here, because the district court should have considered whether the time served should be concurrent or credit, and then whether the sentences should be concurrent or consecutive, and that's functionally the same thing, or it was... Well, similar enough questions that Kitts should control?
That's what they're saying, and that is actually inconsistent with what counsel said at the very beginning of her argument, which is that she's not asserting a Setzer-based 2255 claim.
Say that again? She's not what?
That she's not asserting a Setzer-based 2255 claim. Because the only way you can get to the court saying, hey, there's a separate basis for finding this sentence unlawful, is if the court said there was something wrong at the original sentencing. And so the argument about Setzer has to really go to the original sentencing if it's even going to get us to the point where the district court can engage in a resentencing. Because under 2255, the district court can't engage in a resentencing or any other form of 2255 relief if the original sentence was not unlawful. So the argument about Setzer really does have to look back at the original sentencing and say, was the original sentencing somehow unlawful because the Supreme Court 2 years later in Setzer said district courts have discretion to run these sentences consecutive or concurrent. And I think the answer to that question is no. As we pointed out, that 2255 claim, there's all kinds of procedural bars to it, which we've outlined in our brief. But the more fundamental problem is Setzer is not a decision that applies retroactively on collateral review. And even if it did, the only thing that Setzer said was that district courts have discretion to run these sentences consecutive or concurrent. Setzer recognized district courts may not even want to or need to or feel that it is appropriate to exercise that discretion in some cases, particularly when a state sentence has not yet been imposed. And here, the facts of the original sentencing are, Mr. Mitchell never requested that his federal sentence be run concurrent with his yet-to-be-imposed state sentence. In fact, he acknowledged that the sentences would likely be run consecutive.
That's a default argument, procedural default argument you're making?
It certainly does go to the procedural default, but we would also argue it goes to the merits. It's hard to say that the original sentence was unlawful simply because the district court didn't exercise discretion that the Supreme Court later said it had but didn't have to exercise.
Go back to Judge McKee's question, which I thought was a good one, and it sort of parroted your friend on the other side's argument, which is why doesn't the resentencing start as soon as the 2255 motion is granted?
Because the 2255 proceedings are not complete.
I understand that, but why? They're not complete, but they've started.
They've started, yes. And so
why is that enough to say the resentencing has started? So anything that happens thereafter is a resentence.
Well, because the district court appropriately concluded that it couldn't complete the resentencing because it lacked authority to complete the resentencing. Once the district court made the determination.
I thought it just stayed it for waiting for two to come down.
It did stay it. Yes, that's correct. So it stayed the resentencing. After Stitt 2 came down, the court actually, at defendant's request, stayed the proceedings even longer to let all the litigation in this court resolve itself concerning the status of Tennessee burglary and aggravated burglary. Once all of that had settled, the court said, look, it is now clear, the law is very clear, that these offenses count as ACCA predicates. Your original sentence was lawful.
I got that, but you said the judge didn't have the legal authority to go forward with the resentencing. I didn't read the record that way. I thought the judge just stayed things so the judge would get guidance from other courts, but I didn't think the judge said, I don't have the power to do this right now. I thought it just perhaps prudently said, let's see how the chips fall in the appellate courts.
Let me clarify. I think you're right that the judge at a certain point in time was saying, yes, I'm staying the proceedings. After the proceedings were stayed, once the court when the court granted the government's motion to vacate the order granting 2255 relief, at that point, the reason the court granted that motion was because it determined that the law had now shown that Mr. Mitchell's original sentence was not unlawful. Once it reached that conclusion, right, that the original sentence was not unlawful, it didn't have any basis or authority under 2255 to proceed to a resentencing or any other form of 2255 relief. I mean, the general rule is that when you have a sentence that is imposed, like the only authority that a district court has to throw it out and conduct a resentencing is because the original sentence was unlawful. When the district court concluded that the original sentence was not unlawful, and in fact had never been unlawful, it appropriately concluded at that point, I don't have authority to finish this resentencing under 2255. And so it did the appropriate thing. It just tried to correct the situation.
Which is why we're trying to figure out what the legal consequence was of starting a process of resentencing that was never completed.
Well, and I think the answer is that you when you don't have a completed resentencing, there isn't a resentencing. I think you hit on the key
because
question.
Because you started it. If you didn't finish it, the person didn't get resentenced. I mean, that's the argument, right?
Exactly, Your Honor. Okay. And I think you hit on a key question earlier, Judge McKee, when you said the question is really about, is reinstatement of a vacated sentence a new sentencing? And this court has never treated it that way. I mean, sentencing encompasses certain, procedural requirements, certain things that district courts have to do. When you are reinstating a sentence, you are never doing any of those things, and you're not supposed to be doing any of those things. You're supposed to be taking the original judgment and putting it back in place. And the only reason that happens, the reason that has happened most commonly, I would say, in this court, is when there has been an erroneous grant of 2255 relief. And the reason that you reinstate the sentence is because 2255 does not authorize the sentence to be vacated unless the original sentence was, in fact, unlawful. If it wasn't unlawful, you have to put it back in place. And that's exactly what the district court did here. I mean, the district court essentially did here what this court has done in many other cases in trying to correct errors made in the process of granting a 2255. The only difference is that this was a unique situation where the district court determined the defendant wouldn't be prejudiced by delaying the proceedings until all the litigation and stit in the other cases played out. And so we have a situation where we didn't get a judgment that was entered that was then reversed by this court. We had as an order that was entered by the district court. The district court realized that its order, its previous order, was incorrect and was wrong, and it got rid of that order.
In some cases, the resentencing completed, right, after stit one. In some cases, 2255 relief granted, resentencing happens, burglary is not considered a qualifying offense, comes up to our court, and after stit two, we send it back down and say, reimpose the original sentence.
Yeah, in every case where that happened, that's what this court did. The only cases in which this court didn't remand with instructions to reinstate the original sentence was when there was a separate argument apart from stit as to why the sentence was unlawful.
Did we have the authority to remand it to say resentence? I know we didn't do that, you're saying, but did we have the authority to do it?
My argument would be no, because 2255 only gives a court's authority to engage in a resentencing or correction of sentence process when the original sentence is unlawful. And when a court has made the determination that the original sentence was not unlawful and never was unlawful, there's no legal or statutory authority for a court to then say, let's just reopen the proceedings. The statutes are very clear. You know, once the sentence is imposed, once the appeal process has played out, you have a final judgment. The judgment becomes final. And there's only certain ways in which you can reopen a final judgment. 2255 is one of those ways, but it has certain limitations. And so the issue here is that the district court, while it was engaged in the process and before it had completed the process of the 2255 proceedings, it realized that based on the change in law, Mr. Mitchell was not eligible for 2255 relief because his sentence was not and never had been unlawful. At that point, the district court did the appropriate thing. It vacated the order that had granted relief that it shouldn't have granted, and it reinstated the original judgment. It just basically put everything back where it was. And in fact, that's the whole purpose of 2255, right? When there is an error, it's to put a defendant in a position he would have been absent the error. When there is no error, then there shouldn't be any sort of new proceedings to correct anything.
One of the things that seems to me we occasionally get concerned about is this the first bite at the apple or the second bite at the apple? And if it's the only time that you got to bite the apple, then we're sort of looking around for ways to see if we can do equity here. Here, you've been saying repeatedly that there was no error at the time of the first sentencing. If I understand the record right, the defendant did ask the judge to take into account that there was going to be anticipated additional state proceedings in fashioning an appropriate sentence. So the issue of I'm going to be sentenced in the state court came up, but what he didn't do is he didn't ask that the sentence be concurrent to whatever that state sentence was. So he could have done that.
And he could have
premised a 2255 on ineffective assistance of counsel for not having asked that, but he didn't do any of those things.
Correct, Your Honor.
So it isn't as if this person didn't have the opportunity to make the concurrent consecutive, an argument that would be stronger now than it would have been back at the time, but he didn't make it when he could have made it.
Correct, Your Honor. I see my time has elapsed. May I just briefly respond and make one additional point in regard to that? This isn't the Mr. Mitchell just requesting a second bite of the apple. This is, in fact, requesting a third bite at the apple because he had the opportunity to argue about the consecutive and concurrent at his original federal sentencing. He also had that opportunity at his state sentencing, which occurred after. And the state court actually rejected that argument and imposed its state sentence to run consecutive to his federal sentence. So he's essentially asking for a third bite at the apple when he's already had two bites. And because the district court correctly determined that his original sentence was not unlawful, that he shouldn't have another chance to get that bite at the apple, we ask this court to affirm the judgment.
Any further questions? All right. Thank you, counsel. All right. 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Your Honors, Mr. Mitchell, as the district court found in its order vacating the 2255 order and in its order on the motion for reconsideration, the district court held that it had no lawful authority at the original sentencing to order his state sentence concurrent with his federal sentence. That authority developed in the interim between when he was originally sentenced and when the court imposed his new sentence. And this court's precedent requires that when we are imposing a new sentence after a validly vacated 2255, that the court apply the intervening changes in law, which includes not only STIT 2, which harms Mr. Mitchell, but also Setzer and the changes to the guidelines, which require the district court to have considered consecutive sentencing here. I also want to note that the government has a mistaken view of the record. The district court did not determine that it lacked authority to continue or to complete the resentencing hearing. In fact, in its order reinstating the original judgment, the district court explicitly stated at page 1118 that the final hearing, resentencing hearing, did not occur because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And in its footnote on page 1121, it said that no sentencing hearing was required because the original sentence was the mandatory minimum. But that mandatory minimum should have been reduced by the amount of time that Mr. Mitchell sat in state custody on relevant conduct. Importantly, the government has not addressed the consecutive or concurrent question at all. Instead, it has pivoted to the 2255 issue and whether or not Setzer is creates independent 2255 relief. I want the court to remember that in Kitts, the other case that we are discussing here, the court did not conclude that the second argument made in Kitts, the court did not conclude that that was an independent 2255 claim that was successful. All the court concluded was that the sentence needed to be reconsidered based on this other claim that Mr. Kitts' sentence was invalid. We ask the court to remember that Mr. Mitchell won the 2255. At the time that the district court vacated the 2255, it did so based on binding circuit court precedent. That was a correct ruling, and the court correctly proceeded to resentencing as was required.
I'm sorry, I know you're out of time, but can you just go to your friend on the other side's point that your client didn't raise this issue during the 2255? That resentencing, as you'd call it?
Didn't raise the question of concurrent or consecutive. That's also not accurate. During the second installment of the resentencing hearing, Mr. Mitchell's attorney specifically asked that it be ordered concurrent with his state time.
What about when he moved for 2255 relief? Did he cite the he wouldn't have cited the?
No, Your Honor, we have never relied on Setzer as a 2255 claim. We've never argued that he should receive any 2255 relief based on Setzer. He received 2255 relief based on the correct law in this circuit at the time, based on the valid controlling law in this circuit. Now, he still is subject to ACCA because the law changed, but that has to do with the imposition of the new sentence. The court applied the new STIT 2, but it also should have applied other intervening changes in the law. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Case will be submitted. May call the next case.